Welcome back for another episode of Clean Tech Talk, where we at Clean Technica interview clean tech leaders from around the world. With topics ranging from electric cars to climate change communication, you can listen to our full podcast series by visiting our website at cleantechnica.com.
We are here for another episode of Clean Tech Talk. I'm Zach Shahan, CEO of Clean Technica. And joining me today are Chris Groves and Michal Syed Navid from Wärtsilä, or Wärtsilä, as it's pronounced in its native language. So we're talking today about energy storage systems, fun stuff, batteries, integrating this into the grid. But, you know, to start with, let's get a little bit of an intro on who we're talking to. So Chris Groves is a product manager at Wärtsilä, supporting fire safety research and development. Chris is a member of NFPA's Energy Storage Research Consortium and participates actively in UL 9540 and NFPA 855 technical committees. Michal is the fire protection engineer at Wärtsilä, supporting and leading fire protection and code compliance design reviews. And Wärtsilä Energy Storage and Optimization is one of the top five storage integrators in the world. Safety is their number one priority, of course, and they have an unparalleled track record when it comes to fire safety, thanks, I'm sure, in part to Chris and Michal. Wärtsilä ES&O is an active member and partner of organizations across the energy storage industry aimed at educating and advancing best practices in fire safety and emergency response. So this is great stuff. Naturally, energy storage batteries are critical to integrating renewables into the grid. This is one of the biggest topics and most important aspects of the clean tech revolution globally. I'm curious to get a little more background from you two about how you got into this career and then how you found yourself in these positions in Wärtsilä more specifically. So we can start with Chris.
Yeah, so my background is in mechanical engineering. I was working for a contract manufacturer in the US, and around 2015, I think, is when the ESS systems were really kind of coming aboard. You know, a big system at that time was 1 megawatt. Projects were, you know, less than 20 megawatt in size. So I had an opportunity to work with a number of ESS companies at that time. Eventually, I found myself over at Wärtsilä, where they were just launching a brand new product, our GridSolve Quantum. They needed some support on the team and the hardware engineering group, especially on education and fire safety. So Wärtsilä, you know, took it upon themselves to be a leader in this space. And we've worked as a group to make safer systems and try to continuously improve our product.
Sounds good. And Michal, what's your background? How'd you get into this field and in this position?
Yeah. Hey, Zach. Glad to be here again. So I actually joined Wärtsilä just about a year ago. Before that, I worked for a major utility in the Northeast, working on batteries and installing batteries from a customer perspective. And then I found myself looking at other integrators across the market, and Wärtsilä really stood out in its portfolio, its commitment to safety. And then I made that switch over to Wärtsilä. And Chris and I have been leading those fire protection code compliance design reviews and upcoming product changes ever since. So yeah, happy to be here.
Imagine sometimes at this time of year, you're happier to be down in Virginia than up in the Northeast. Yeah.
Right? Yep.
So we're going to start with just some basics here, just to make sure we're on the same page and understand what we're talking about well. So first of all, why do companies complete fire safety testing, and is it required to deliver a project? And we can go to Michal for that.
Yeah, absolutely. So fire safety testing is critical for many reasons. I think number one is the obvious. It's a safety concern. Lithium ion batteries are predominantly used in energy storage systems. And with that, they also are prone to a phenomenon called thermal runaway, which can lead to fires and explosions under the right conditions. So it's essential to address those safety concerns. And in recent years, there's been a number of fires at these large energy storage facilities, which honestly has resulted in negative public perception, which brings me to my second point about understanding what the technology is and how the public perceives it. So overall, fire safety testing is needed to ensure that we are mitigating those safety issues or deploying in large scale in a safe and reliable manner.
So, baseline testing requirements. What are the minimum requirements needed to test a product?
So from a product standpoint, there is UL 1973. That standard evaluates the battery system's ability to safely withstand abuse conditions. In addition to that, there is UL 9540A. So that is looking at the battery technology and its susceptibility to undergo thermal runaway, and then evaluating the fire and explosion hazard characteristics from those tests. So it's a multi-layered approach. You have a cell level testing, module testing, unit testing, and installation level testing. 9540A really evaluates the battery technology, where UL 1973 evaluates the battery system. So it takes into account the, say, switchgear and BMS. In addition to that, there's a large number of fire codes throughout the globe. In particular, in the US, you have, say, the NFPA codes, NFPA 855, the International Fire Code, there could be the California Fire Code. Outside of the US, a lot of countries actually revert back to NFPA 855 as the leading standard in fire protection, and they also may have locally adopted requirements.
Interesting. And so, if a company successfully completes baseline testing requirements, what does that tell us about their product?
So, if the minimum requirements are met, I would say personally, congrats. But we need to go above and beyond the minimum requirements to really demonstrate the safety of the systems. So, overall, the industry needs to advance and get towards that common goal of mitigating those concerns of say, fire and explosion, and going above and beyond, which Wärtsilä has done that.
Hello, clean tech enthusiasts. If you enjoy Clean Tech Talk and Clean Technica, please consider pitching in a few dollars a month at cleantechnica.com/support. That's cleantechnica.com/support, where you can sign up in seconds with a credit card, pitch in a few dollars a month, or whatever you like. Some people actually contribute $100 a month to help us cover climate change and clean tech and try to help the world one word at a time. Thank you. And is the baseline getting higher as the market matures?
Yes, code committees like the UL 9540 and NFPA 855 are gearing up for another round of revisions. Those groups are catching up with the lessons learned from recent best failure events in the field. So between the two committees, we're actually working jointly together to develop new testing requirements to hopefully prevent or lessen the impact should further occurrences happen. Wärtsilä, we're actively participating in those groups, and we've already completed a number of tests that have gone above and beyond, say, the minimum code requirements.
And, naturally, I think anyone would say it's always better to be safe. When it comes to bespoke testing, why are some manufacturers going above and beyond what's required? It's also costly to do more than is required in a lot of industries. So why are some companies going above and beyond on this?
Yeah, you're seeing a lot of companies going above and beyond and performing large-scale fire tests that are absolutely worst case. And that's honestly should be welcomed within the industry. By carrying out such large-scale tests, you're really putting your systems at the worst situation possible and determining what happens after that. Using those results, we can determine the best course of action, how to mitigate it, how to prepare for it, emergency response. So there's a lot of things that come out of these large-scale testing. And some manufacturers like Wärtsilä, for example, we go above and beyond the minimum requirements like UL 9540A. We're actively pouring a lot of investment and time into R&D efforts in determining different components of where we can tweak our system to be as best as possible. And we're very transparent with our results. We're volunteering to show these results to prospective customers, to ASJs. We're getting the word out of how we do these tests so that we engender some confidence within our community, our partners, or local safety officials, et cetera. So that number one is a priority is safety.
And just nailing down a little further, what particular tests have you seen companies doing, and what's involved in this kind of bespoke testing?
Yeah, so one of the big tests is similar to 9540A testing setup, utilizing an initiating enclosure and say adjacent target enclosures. But instead of heating a single cell into thermal runaway and see how it propagates from cell to cell or module to module, it's intentionally igniting and causing a multi-cell, say, self-sustaining fire that's not ventilation limited. So a fully engulfed large-scale fire. In addition to that, we also are looking at validation of the explosion mitigation strategies for NFPA 68, NFPA 69. So as an example, Wärtsilä performed two tests for our NFPA 69 system. The first was extensive modeling of the system at a wide range of release locations and conditions to ensure the concentrations remain below 25%, even in a worst-case scenario. And then this modeling was backed up by actually doing a real-world test where we evaluated a number of different fans, used actual battery gas mixture, and actually tested the system while monitoring the gas concentration levels. So this allows us to provide a complete, robust package to the AHJ that we know that conceptually it works, and in real-world situations, it would perform as expected. Obviously, there's a lot that goes and that's involved in this. There's a lot of prep work. There's a lot of logistics, procuring test samples, creating test plans, arranging module or unit freight and offloading. You also need to make sure you're answering the right questions. What are the stakeholders, like the fire protection engineers or the fire marshals? What actually are they looking to capture and gain from this information?
Yeah, and what specific gaps in the baseline testing is bespoke testing filling?
Yeah, so there's some in the industry who don't believe 9540A represents a worst case scenario. As an example, a forklift hitting a battery rack during commissioning, or a lightning strike. So in a full scale fire, will the system contain that fire and not allow it to spread from unit to unit or row to row? Is the unit to unit spacing adequate, or does it, say, need to be increased? Additionally, looking at deflagration hazard, is the system designed adequately to mitigate a deflagration event? Have they used a safety factor or conservative approach to their design, or are they
What kind of event was that?
A deflagration hazard or explosion hazard?
Okay.
Yeah, so ensuring that the correct fans are selected, the appropriate size deflagration panel is used. We at Wärtsilä were continuously pursuing R&D and system level testing so we can better understand how all these subsystems work together to make a complete and safer package in the future.
It's so important, and I think it just goes to show there's so much that goes into this. I mean, we're surrounded by electronics, we're surrounded by battery powered things in our lives, and even more so in industry. And most of us don't really recognize or see how much is going behind the scenes to make that safe. As we sort of highlighted, a big issue these days is the communication around this, or the discussions around this. It's very easy to throw the story out of proportion, or throw things out of context with fires, because they get our attention. And so, who are the main stakeholders involved in reviewing the results of fire safety testing, and what form does that take?
The number one thing we like to do is be as transparent as possible. And the stakeholders involved are authority having jurisdictions. So AHJs, they can be the local fire department, first responders, fire marshals. Those folks really need to be involved with cradle to grave. They need to understand what's the technology, how are we mitigating the hazards associated with it. In addition, you will also want to be conveying these results to customers, communities, code officials, technical committees, even within standards and those body organizations. The goal is so that everyone is on the same page or as clear as possible what the hazards are, how we're mitigating it. And if we continue to do that, honestly, we can bring the entire industry forward and keep advancing fire safety as a number one priority. There's a lot of misinformation, and that's why we need to come together and push the right information out.
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of times people who are involved in something at a very technical level don't necessarily see the broader concern about communications around that because, they're focused on the facts, the technicalities. So that was sort of the first part, like who are the main stakeholders involved in this testing? And then second part is how can you communicate complex fire safety testing results in a way that makes sense to local communities, to the public, to people who are concerned about fire. So how do you go about communicating those safety fire safety testing results?
So we at Wärtsilä, we've done these tests. We know how the system performs. We know a lot of the myths out there, or the things that have happened to other systems. So we work internally and with the assistance of experts like Fire and Risk Alliance, an FPE firm in Rockville, Maryland. We're able to present to AHJ specifically fire departments about the risks with ESS systems. So we've jointly developed emergency response plans. We have emergency response training. FRA has a team of retired FDNY firefighters and fire protection engineers who are very well versed in the subject and can articulate, clearly explain the hazards and mitigation methods in an easy to understand terms that AHJ's firefighters and community members alike can understand.
What kind of creative ways of communicating results have you seen?
We personally attempted many ways to convey this information. So everything from white papers, industry events, speaking engagements. I know in our previous episode, Chris mentioned FRA. Noah Ryder was a managing partner. He was also in an episode recently. So we've had a lot of folks discuss about this topic, and we're not shy to come clean from all the hazards, lay it out on the table. We've done modeling, we've done real world tests, presentations, countless presentations to people, prospective customers, brown bag sessions, etc. So the information's out there. It's just getting together, understanding what's at hand, and then finding ways to explain this to people who are not really as technically versed in this area.
Yeah, I imagine like sort of explaining the risks, explaining how you go about handling those risks, and putting it all into context is a big help. It's good to hear that, that you're trying all different approaches, sort of getting a feel for what works well, what works in different communities and with different stakeholders. I think it is one of the most critical things. Like it's obviously it's critical to tackle the technology, to improve the technology, to improve integration and all of that. But I think from a standpoint of like increasing deployment, increasing renewable energy supply and energy storage systems, the communication angle is something that might be forgotten with some companies or in some regions. I have a master's degree in city and regional planning, and it was always important to involve the community early and to get them really fully engaged and aware of stuff. Otherwise, you get backlash. And we've seen it with even simple things like solar panels and wind turbines. So it can happen with anything. But that's great to hear that you're being creative, all the testing you're doing. As a conclusion, just do you have any predictions for how fire safety testing will develop in the coming years, how that will evolve?
As I mentioned previously, working out with NFPA 855 and UL 9540, as an industry, we understand there are gaps and lessons learned from some recent incidents. So I can definitely see in the future having a test standard for containerized systems. So these 20-foot and 40-foot enclosures, additional module level testing, so purposely igniting the vent gas, forcing a flaming event, full system installation level testing, ensuring that the explosion mitigation systems like NFPA 68 to 69 are working as intended. And even maybe as far as even a testing standard for stacking container systems.
That's interesting. Michelle?
Pretty much summarized it well. But I guess adding to that, as an industry, we should, as the industry knowledge matures and requirements change, we should see safer designs in terms of the actual chemistry of the batteries, the design of the modules, and the overall system design. So just keep progressing forward, all of us pushing the boundaries of innovation and continuing to develop the system without compromising safety, because I think that's going to take us far in this industry. And
Yeah, the chemistry is, constantly changing. So imagine you have to sort of constantly look about how you need to adapt and how you need to adapt safety testing to change with the times. So, well, thanks a lot. Really appreciate it. I'm actually curious to jump in and look at, some of your videos or white papers on these topics, because it's something, I think you don't really think a lot about. And then as you guys are talking, I'm like, oh yeah, that's interesting. I haven't heard about that side of this topic. So, and it's good just to talk to technical experts about it. Thanks a lot for your help, and have a good day.
yeah, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Clean Tech Talk. Join us next time to get your electric fix. If you would like to sponsor our podcast, send us an email at accounts@cleantechnica.com. That's accounts@cleantechnica.com. Thanks.
Yeah.